You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Friday, March 13, 2026. Two sides of the coin. U.S. E&Ps increasingly see LNG as way to get a piece of the arbitrage pie. Published by Richard Pratt. Ever since U.S. LNG exports commenced in 2016 from Cheniere's Sabine Pass facility, upstream gas producers have carefully followed price differentials between Henry Hub and the prices at which LNG can be sold in other markets, notably Asia and Europe. Initially, opportunities for shippers to realize a significant arbitrage were limited, as a high proportion of U.S.-produced LNG was lifted by Asian utility players to meet their baseload supply requirements rather than traded in the burgeoning spot market. Things changed dramatically in 2022 following the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which not only led to the demise of Russian pipeline gas supplies to Europe and caused prices to spike, but also created new arbitrage opportunities for LNG shippers. In today's RBN blog, we look at the different approaches that the natural-born drillers in the U.S. upstream have adopted in response, each of which has a different risk/reward profile. Gas prices at the Dutch Title Transfer Facility, or TTF, jumped to unprecedented levels after the Ukraine invasion, undoubtedly amplified by the fact that Russia's state-owned Gazprom had depleted its holdings of gas in European Union, or the EU, storage, adding to fears of a major supply shortage. In the year before the invasion, Russian supplies met nearly 40% of EU gas demand. See, you don't own me. That fear inevitably spilled over to other gas markets, notably Asia, causing prices, based on the JKM index, to spike, increasing the premium to the Henry Hub price in the U.S. This not only reflected the fact that LNG markets had to increasingly compete for marginal supply, but also the ability of destination-flexible U.S. cargoes to be delivered to the highest-paying market. With that change, U.S. upstream E&P companies, who had frequently been dealing with deeply discounting gas prices, began to get serious about finding a way to capture a piece of the arbitrage pie. Given the turbulent situation in the Middle East, and the fact that Qatar halted LNG production on March 2 after Iran struck two of its facilities in retaliation for U.S. and Israeli airstrikes, the kind of volatility that stimulated the trend initially, including an upturn in prices, has become more pronounced. The simplest approach to allow producers to get in on the action, championed by LNG producer and seller Cheniere, is the Integrated Production and Marketing, or IPM, contract structure. In its IPM deal with ARC Resources, for example, Cheniere agreed to purchase 140,000 million BTUs per day, about 138 million cubic feet per day, of natural gas over 15 years for its Sabine Pass facility, with the price of the gas based upon the Dutch TTF price, after deductions for a fixed regasification fee, fixed LNG shipping costs, and a fixed liquefaction fee, including a margin. It's effectively a netback contract. In a netback contract, the seller's net price for LNG is calculated by using the downstream market price and deducting agreed costs. Cheniere also has an IPM deal with EOG Resources, in which the gas price is based on a netback from Asia's JKM spot market index, and similar deals with APA, Tourmaline, and Canadian Natural Resources. This is attractive to an LNG project developer, as the agreement not only provides part of its gas supply on a long-term basis, but also allows the developer to lock in a margin by passing along any TTF price risk to the upstream producer. The upstream producer, in turn, obtains price diversification and potential upside when prices spike or markets tighten. The high liquidity of the TTF and Henry Hub futures markets also presents upstream suppliers with the ability to lock in a profit when the curves are suitably aligned. Other E&P companies have taken things further by teaming up with established midstream LNG players. Number 1. Chesapeake Energy, now Expand Energy, agreed to purchase 0.5 million tons per annum, or 0.07 BCF per day, of LNG from Delfin LNG. The project, planned for offshore Louisiana, is currently approaching a final investment decision, or FID. The LNG would be sold FOB, or free on board, to trader Ganvor under a JKM price link deal. FOB means that ownership changes hands when it's loaded onto the ship. Ganvor itself will purchase 2 million tons per annum, 0.26 BCF per day, from the Delfin project. Number 2. Devon Energy has agreed to supply UK trader Centrica with gas equivalent to 5 LNG cargoes per year starting in 2028, with LNG likely to be sourced from the Delfin project, from which Centrica has a FOB contract for 15 years for 1 million tons per annum, 0.13 BCF per day, of LNG. Number 3. EOG has signed a deal with Vitol for pipeline gas supply of 180,000 million BTUs, equivalent to 1.25 million tons per annum, or 0.16 BCF per day, with 140,000 million BTUs priced on a Brent-linked formula, and the remainder on a mixture of Brent or Gulf Coast gas prices for a 10-year period from 2027, as Vitol has also signed with Delfin for offtake of 1 million tons per annum, 0.13 BCF per day, for 20 years, this is the likely processing facility to which the gas will be delivered. Number 4. Ovintiv has taken things one step further by taking liquefaction capacity at the Cedar LNG project under development in British Columbia. Ovintiv has booked 0.5 million tons per annum, 0.07 BCF per day, of LNG production capacity for 12 years, with production from Cedar LNG projected to commence in late 2028. However, the prize for greatest involvement in LNG goes unequivocally to EQT Corporation, which produces about 6% of U.S. natural gas. In the past 2 years, EQT has taken 2 million tons per annum, 0.26 BCF per day, of capacity in Texas LNG, currently under development by Glenfarne, agreed to purchase 2 million tons per annum, 0.26 BCF per day, from Sempra's Port Arthur expansion project, 1.5 million tons per annum, 0.2 BCF per day, from NextDecade's Train 5 expansion at Rio Grande LNG, and 1 million tons per annum, 0.13 BCF per day, on FOB terms from Commonwealth LNG. All contracts are 20 years duration, and EQT intends to ship its U.S. volumes to end users worldwide. EQT's first LNG under these deals is expected in late 2028 or early 2029. EQT's initiative is taking place at a time when market pundits are sounding alarms about U.S. LNG exports getting squeezed due to increasing U.S. natural gas costs and risk of a global LNG supply glut from 2027 onward, impacting prices in downstream markets. This is compounded by the risk of increasing U.S. gas demand for power generation, pushing Henry Hub prices to levels that could have a major impact on LNG trading margins and profitability. But while the prospect of global oversupply and tightening margins can be reasonably questioned, as we explained in Float On, we think it's unlikely we'll see material U.S. cargo cancellations. Although these assessments are plausible, we will have to wait and see. They do not take into consideration the optionality that LNG exports and sales provide to those willing to take the plunge. Consider an E&P company contemplating its production and market planning up to a year ahead. If the company is a pure upstream E&P play, then the commercial options that exist include the following. Number 1. Drill more, or fewer, wells. Number 2. Complete drilled but uncompleted, DUC, wells or build DUC count to create a reserve of latent supply. Number 3. Perform more, or fewer, workovers. Number 4. Meet gas sales obligations via third-party purchases rather than one's own production. This is rarely viable due to supply source commitments. Number 5. Inject, or withdraw, more gas into / from storage. Number 6. Produce from, or shut in, existing wells. However, if the company has the ability to export LNG, a number of downstream options are also available, each with their own economic implications, in addition to producing and selling LNG on a delivered, or DES, basis. These include: Number 1. Sell cargoes on a FOB basis, like EQT. Number 2. If a buyer, a producer in this scenario, has its own shipping, it can sublet its ships. Number 3. Sell the cargo in a product plus shipping deal. Number 4. Perform a FOB DES sale, whereby the cargo is sold to and shipped by a third party who redelivers and resells the cargo to the original seller at the agreed destination. In doing so, the seller avoids the need to charter a ship. Number 5. Load a cargo on one ship and store it for several weeks. Reliquefaction units on modern LNG carriers minimize boil-off. Number 6. Offer to produce a cargo for another upstream player and deliver it to that company FOB. Number 7. Lock in a spread between U.S. and international gas markets, for example by buying Henry Hub futures and selling TTF futures for a sale and delivery to Europe. Number 8. Generate and manage exposure across the Henry Hub, TTF, JKM and Brent markets, backed up / reinforced by the ability to deliver the physical product. Having physical control of the product allows a player to cash out a hedge at a profit and send the cargo to an alternative destination offering a better price. This is called a hedge diversion and can be very profitable. Number 7. Divert cargoes to take advantage of near-term price movements. this is increasingly commonplace. Number 8. Swap lifting dates, and possibly sources, with other off-takers of US LNG to better match purchase and sale obligations, and to optimize shipping costs. While the strategies employed will be highly dependent on the individual company and their goals, the list above indicates the breadth of options potentially on the table. All of these options have different financial consequences. What matters to the E&P company is that it has multiple means of placing its gas in the market, and LNG expands the choices available. These options come at the cost of liquefaction fees, currently in the range of $2.50-$2.90 per million BTU, which will apply over 10 to 20 years, together with the charter party costs of a dedicated fleet of ships, or roughly $80,000 per day for long-term charter, although the latter can be reduced through chartering out ships in the typically liquid LNG carrier market. Market observers who worry about cargo cancellations assume that LNG plants must run at as high a rate as possible. High utilizations have been the case historically, as LNG demand grew faster than LNG supply came on stream, widening arbitrage opportunities and prompting developers to prioritize maximizing their LNG production and debottleneck their facilities to improve capacities. In a commoditized LNG environment, LNG production is likely to be driven by varying near-term market needs and pricing signals. This is not too dissimilar to the oil industry, where refinery run rates are highly responsive to the demand and pricing of the refined products. The limited amount of global LNG storage, approximately 10 days of supply, compared to oil means that overproduction of LNG runs the risk of creating distressed cargoes, which, in turn, would depress spot market prices. By way of comparison, the International Energy Agency, or IEA, requires its members, including the U.S., to have stock levels equivalent to no less than 90 days of net imports. Similarly, sudden reductions in LNG output, as with Qatar shut-in production, have the opposite effect. Near-term market dislocations can give rise to significant pricing volatility, which provides an excellent opportunity to add value to an LNG portfolio. Projections based on assumptions of steady-state operation will likely underestimate the value of having LNG as part of a U.S. E&P player's portfolio. Two Sides of the Coin was written by Ace Frehley and appears as the second song on side two of Kiss's eighth studio album, Unmasked. The hard-rocking song about trying to make up your mind between your main squeeze and a one-night tease is powered by Frehley's guitar and voice. Personnel on the record were Ace Frehley, lead vocals, lead guitar, bass, Paul Stanley, rhythm guitar, backing vocals, Gene Simmons, backing vocals, and Anton Figg, drums. Unmasked was recorded between January and March of 1980 at the record plant in New York City with Vinnie Poncia producing. Made during a tumultuous time in the band's history, it marked a shift away from hard rock and disco dance grooves to a more pop-oriented sound. Simmons and Stanley have gone on record saying it was a wimpy and substandard Kiss album. Released in May 1980, it went to number 35 on the Billboard 200 albums chart and has been certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America. Five singles were released from the LP. Kiss is an American rock band formed in New York City in 1973 by bassist Gene Simmons, guitarist Paul Stanley, guitarist Ace Frehley and drummer Peter Criss. The band was initially called Wicked Lester. Known for their outlandish stage makeup and costumes, they presented an over-the-top stage show with massive lighting, fog and pyrotechnics. Kiss has released 20 studio albums, 13 live albums, 14 compilation albums, 2 EPs and 67 singles and have sold more than 100 million records worldwide. They are members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and have received Kennedy Center honors. 10 members have passed through the band since its formation, with Simmons and Stanley in the band for the whole run. Founding member Ace Frehley died in Morristown, New Jersey, in October 2025 at 74. The band is on hiatus until further notice.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.